Hello, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Excuse Me, Doctor. Thank you, Be Health and Empowered Family, for joining me tonight. My name is Dr. Melissa Clark. You can also call me Dr. Mel. Happy Monday to everybody. Happy back to school for everybody who's just getting back there now. Thank you so much for joining us to kick off this amazing week that we are going to create for ourselves. So, you know, here at Excuse Me, Doctor, we bring you health topics that are based on science so you can be confident and empowered when it comes to making choices for your health, the health of your family, and the health of your community. We do it with clarity, we do it with compassion, and we do it with confidence. And confidence means also that if we don't know something, we'll say we don't know and we'll get right back to you on it. We clarify speculation, we clear up misinformation, and we debunk disinformation. We're here every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we're streaming on YouTube and Facebook. So those folks who are joining us for the first time on YouTube, please remember to hit subscribe. And if it's your first time on Facebook, make sure you hit that like button. We really appreciate you for that. So, you know, we were on a brief summer hiatus. We missed you guys and we're back here. But in the meantime, the Delta variant has just exploded. And what we have been trying to avoid all along, which is our hospitals being overwhelmed, has happened. Hospitals are overrun. People can't get the care that they need in certain parts of the country. Surgeries are being canceled. Whatever happened to flattening the curve? What is it like in our hospitals? Well, we have an emergency medicine physician who's been in the trenches for over 20 years, but has been there since day one of this COVID-19 pandemic. We're going to be talking with her about exactly what it's like in the hospital right now, from the staff's perspective and from the patient's perspective. So share this episode right now, because she is going to be bringing you the insider's perspective. You are not going to want to miss this. So as always, I have to bring in my fabulous producer and co-producer, Mr. Wayne Bruce, and Miss Lila Mays.
Yeah.
Hi there.
What's happening? We're back.
Welcome back.
Hey.
It's been a minute. I forgot to turn the mute button off. I'm still on vacation.
Exactly. It took me a minute to warm up too.
Everybody,
right? Coming off of vacation mode.
Please.
And wait a minute, Lila. You have to raise your left hand again because I saw like this jewelry that was really nice. Oh yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, I love the I like the healing stones. I wear the healing stones. Yes.
All right. All thing. Right.
Lila wearing healing stones in the studio.
And it's on my ring finger, but you know.
Okay. Okay. We're gonna heal your ring finger. Call the cane.
Well, you know, the ring finger, the reason why we wear things on the ring finger is allegedly that's a line that goes straight to your heart. So therefore, you got healing energy going straight to your heart.
Wow. That's right.
Wow. What do you go? What do you? Bam. Do you have a going straight to your heart, Dr. Mel? I'm just wondering. You know, better
yes, I do.
Oh,
I do.
Wow. That's amazing. That was cute, too. That was real cute. That was
thank you.
Whoever
thank you.
Did that really, really loves you.
So let's get back to why we are here tonight. So let us dig into this weekly recap. You know, we always start off with the numbers. We're at 41.8 million cases of COVID in the United States alone.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Wow. And the crazy thing is, you know, it took us 18 months to get here, but we're 140,000 new cases every day at this point in the pandemic. There's a slight hope that cases are kind of dipping a little bit. We're seeing that across the South. Things peaked in mid-August and now appear to be falling. And this kind of follows a 2-month pattern that other surges have taken. But the concern, though, is that with Labor Day, with these football games kicking off, and then as we move into the wintertime, people going back into the fall, rather, people going back indoors, and then finally leading up to Thanksgiving, that these are all things that might prolong this particular surge. So we, you know, just are hoping that more people get vaccinated, more people continue to mask and social distance throughout all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually had tickets to go see D Nice at the Hollywood Bowl. I decided that that might not be the best move. You know, I know. And listen, I got ostracized for it. I did. People were like, you really? Giving up your tickets for D-Nice? I'm like, it's too many of y'all out there. I don't know if you vaccinated and I don't know if you're taking COVID tests.
Right. And so, you'll be dancing.
I'm not going.
Right. I get it. I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that's a reasonable choice. You know, and then when we're talking about, unfortunately, deaths lagging behind these hospitalizations that have been increasing, we're now up to 677,000 deaths. We're at 1,700 deaths a day from COVID. There's reasons to be serious about protecting yourself and those that you come in contact with, because it's not just about you going out to enjoy D-Nice. It's whether and whether you'll get sick. It's whether you'll take that virus potentially back home to people that are vulnerable in your household and that you interact with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my aunt, who is in, you know, residential care, and all of those residents. So, yeah, we all have to do our part to be extra safe.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so that leads us to Vax Facts. Where are we with those numbers, Dr. Mill?
53% of the United States is fully vaccinated. That's everybody. It's higher for, I think, 59% for those people 12 and older, the people who are eligible to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have crossed over into the majority of Americans are vaccinated. Now, it doesn't break out like that everywhere. So, for example, the Northeast is leading with 65% and above of most Northeast states of their populations being vaccinated. Southern states, unfortunately, account for the majority of states that are in the 10 least vaccinated states, with 45% or fewer of their citizens being vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just say this. This is a little Dr. Melissa Clark commentary. The South is the section of the country that has never meant Black people well. And it is where the most Black people are unvaccinated and getting hospitalized. But I think we're getting wise to the game. So Southern racial disparities in vaccine rates are shrinking, y'all. That's great.
That's great.
So in places, in places like Georgia, the gap between the percent of whites vaccinated and the percent of Blacks vaccinated is shrinking rapidly as more and more Black people are making the decision to get vaccinated.
Okay, come on, Black folk.
All right, then.
We love all folk. All folk do matter, but come on,
we do. All folk matter, but power to the people. You know,
I mean,
come on in here, Black people, and get
well. And I only single out Black people because you know we have been disproportionately affected by COVID hospitalizations and deaths. So that's why I'm singling out African Americans. But love to our Latino brothers and sisters. They too are getting hip to getting vaccinated and the benefits of it, because they're 15% of the population, but they're 27%, accounting for 27% of the new vaccinations in the last few weeks.
Cool. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so I gave them my D-Nice tickets, right? But I went to the Funk Fest at the Greek Theater. But listen, let me tell you, because the Greek Theater,
it's never meant Black people well. And it is where the most Black people are unvaccinated and getting hospitalized. But I think we're getting wise to the game. So Southern racial disparities in vaccine rates are shrinking, y'all. That's great.
That's great.
So in places, in places like Georgia, the gap between the percent of whites vaccinated and the percent of Blacks vaccinated is shrinking rapidly as more and more Black people are making the decision to get vaccinated.
Okay, come on, Black folks.
All right, then.
We love all folk. All folk good yes. matter. But come on,
we
black
do.
Folks.
All folk matter. But folk but matter. Power to the people, you know.
I mean.
Yeah. Come over here, black come people, on. And get
well,
back
and I only them. I only single out black people because, you know, we have been disproportionately affected by exactly. COVID hospitalizations that's and it. Deaths. That's so it. That's exactly. why I'm singling mm-hmm. out African Americans. But love to our Latino brothers and sisters. They too are getting hip to getting vaccinated mm-hmm. And the benefits of it, because they're 15% of the population, but they're 27%. Accounting for 27% of the new vaccinations in the last few weeks.
Cool. Wow. That's amazing. Okay, so yeah. I gave them my D-Nice tickets, right? But I went to the Funk Fest at the Greek Theater. But listen, let me tell you, because the Greek Theater, you have to show proof of either vaccination or a negative COVID test. Yeah. And when I tell you my Latino brothers and sisters was out there getting their party on, I was like, well, all right.
Well, that's wonderful.
That's you know, I'm in Los Angeles, so it's a high population. So it was amazing to see.
Wonderful.
Moving on to this. This is disturbing. Pregnant women and COVID, and the impact it's having on pregnant women. Let's get into this, Dr. That.
Yeah, so pregnancy is a risk factor for severe COVID-19. Everybody should know that by now, hopefully. But the Delta variant particularly has been having high negative effects on pregnant women. We know multiple pregnant women died of COVID-19 in recent weeks in a single Mississippi hospital. We're seeing unprecedented numbers of C-sections in the ICU for pregnant women that are ending up on ventilators, because when you're pregnant, it's harder to ventilate you, because it's harder to push air into the lungs because the baby is pushing up on your diaphragm. And so they're having to deliver babies by C-section in order to create more room and in the woman's body, and also to make sure that the baby gets enough oxygen, because they're not getting enough oxygen from their mom because their mom's lungs are sick due to COVID. We've always known that COVID-19 causes more severe symptoms in pregnant women, but like I said, Delta variant is sort of off the chain. And a recent study from my alma mater, University of California, San Francisco, found that people who develop a case of COVID-19 illness during pregnancy are 60% more likely to have preterm birth. So it's not just the mom, it's the babies too that are indirectly being affected.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why there's a recommendation that women who are pregnant get vaccinated to help cut down on the risk of these things happening.
And these women in this Mississippi hospital, none of them are vaccinated. The women who perished.
We're right? Correct. Yes, correct. And, you know, we're going to hear from our special guest. I hope y'all are like on the edge of your seats, because she's going to be telling us about, you know, what she's seeing in her hospital and emergency department in terms of people who are vaccinated versus unvaccinated coming in to get treated for COVID-19.
Wow,
that's good to hear. So let's go over the week since we've been gone. The president actually stepped in and mandated vaccines for federal workers and contractors.
Yes, that is right. Federal employees, contractors, and healthcare workers that work at healthcare institutions that get federal funding. So that's basically all of them. That's like 17 million people right there. And then 80 million additional people who work for companies of 100 employees or more. So my company, for example, is now going to be verifying vaccine records. You got to show proof. So, and employers also have to provide paid time off for employees to go get vaccinated if they're not yet done so. And so, you know, there's all kind of resistance. Right. I'm sure y'all have heard
of
it.
Course.
I've heard of healthcare workers quitting. 29% of U.S. voters who are unvaccinated, of those people, 83% say they aren't planning on getting vaccinated regardless of the mandate. So, you know, I actually kind of hoped it didn't come to this, to be honest with you, because now the conversation is going to be about, rather than the merits of getting vaccinated, it's going to be about, oh, you can't force me to do something.
Right.
As opposed to
exactly.
The real underlying science behind getting vaccinated. So, you know, I was hoping it didn't come to this, but people are dying.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dr. Mill. I was hoping it didn't come to this either, but here we are. Wayne, are you to boost or not to boost?
I think you were to boost or not to boost, but your boy is definitely going to boost if it comes to a booster. And I don't mean caboose. I do mean boost.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that we talked about this because there's some confusion out there about who should be getting boosters and when. And so just so everybody knows, only people who have something wrong with their immune system should be getting boosters right now. It's not, it has not been yet approved by the FDA for everybody. So talk with your doctor if you think that you should be in that group about the wisdom of going ahead and getting a booster at this point and when to time it vis-a-vis when your last shot was, but realize that it's mainly for people who are immune compromised at that, at this point, that's who the FDA approved the boosters for.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep it a buck. I'm not ready to boost. So I'm not ready to boost. I'm fully vaccinated.
Right.
And you know, the vaccine is still 80% effective against the Delta variant, no matter when you got vaccinated. So, you're okay.
Okay, so, good. I was really happy to hear that news. Yes.
So just to make sure about the booster, are we, like, flu season is upon us. Mm-hmm. So are they going to do both together? Have you heard?
Yes. Yes, they are working on being able to give the COVID and the flu vaccine together. Yep.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Wow. Okay.
Interesting.
Go ahead, Lyle.
And it's shown that the flu vaccine, people who were vaccinated against the flu vaccine had a lower chance of ending up in the hospital with COVID. So there was some sort of, boosting of the immune system in general by getting the flu vaccine. So just want to put that out there to people too.
Awesome. I see my mom in the audience.
Yeah. Next month will be time to get your flu shot.
Okay.
Yeah. I see my mom in the audience. She's already talking about getting her flu shot.
All right, mom.
All right. Yeah. Stepping to better health. Went on a few steps today in Los Angeles. Yes, I did.
Did you get in the neighborhood? Did you get in about 7,000 steps?
All told, I got in 10 plus.
Wow. Yes.
Come on now.
Come on, 10.
By doing that daily, it has been shown to lower the risk of mortality, of dying, by 50 to 70% after 11 years. So when they looked at people who got in 7,000 steps over an 11-year period, they had up to a 70% lower rate of dying compared to people who took fewer steps. And these findings held no matter, what age, what demographic you were, and it didn't matter how fast you were doing them. So, you could be just taking your time as long as you get in 7,000.
Right.
And the more steps a day was associated with better for staying alive up to 10,000. So if you happen to get more than 10,000, it doesn't necessarily give you any added benefit, but up to 10,000 gives you added benefit. So, as I say, get to stepping.
Well, that means I'm going to put my limit at 9,999. People are going to be like, I can't step over to 10,000 because it's not going to
help. No more.
Right.
Well, you know what time it is.
What time is that?
It's time for
the weekly debunk. Stopping misinformation in its tracks.
So Tyrone Twitter Finger says, hey, Dr. Christina Parks, who has a PhD from the University of Michigan, she basically said the vaccine does not work and we shouldn't have to take it.
I don't know about that. Dr.
Mel,
is that true?
No, it isn't. And I actually know who Dr. Christina Parks is because like two or three people sent me the same video. So I don't know if you want to play like a little clip from it, Wayne.
This video?
Hello, my name is Dr. Christina Parks. I received my PhD in cellular and molecular biology right here in the state of Michigan from University of Michigan Medical School. And so I'm very well versed in the science of both these mRNA gene therapy vaccines, this kind of technology, as well as what a vaccine is designed to do in the body, what it can do, what it can't do, and the fact that this is extremely complex science that has been oversimplified in the media to basically take away our freedom of choice.
Yeah. All right, so that was an intro to her 8 minutes, and we don't have the time to give her the 8 minutes, but I will say this about just her opening remarks. She is a PhD, as she said, but it's important to note that her current occupation is as a science teacher for a Christian homeschool organization based in Grand Rapids. So that's a wonderful, noble calling. But it's unclear if she is as well versed in vaccines and immunology as she says she is, because she may or may not have studied that under the PhD. She also pushes ivermectin, which we know the manufacturer has said has no evidence as a prevention for COVID. So I just want to give you all that perspective, because you kind of need to know who you're listening to when you listen to these videos on YouTube. She also slipped in there in those little opening remarks about gene therapy. Now, vaccines are not gene therapy. That is, again, a characterization that's meant to scare people. Gene therapy means that certain enzymes are given along with human DNA to literally repair genetic variations that result in disease, like cancers, cystic fibrosis, and sickle cell, just to name a few. Vaccines are not that. No enzymes are given that allow the blueprint of how the virus makes the spike protein, in other words, the DNA or messenger RNA. No enzymes are given to allow that to actually get into the area of the cell where your DNA is and alter your DNA in any way. So vaccine skeptics use the gene therapy buzzword to scare people into thinking that vaccines can alter your genes. And what baffles me really is that no one is scared of getting the coronavirus. Understand that when the coronavirus affects you, the entire blueprint of the virus that gets into your cell and causes more virus to be made.
That's the crazy part.
Yeah, that's the crazy part. Like, why are people afraid of the vaccine that only has a small part of the blueprint of the virus, as opposed to being of the DNA or messenger RNA, versus the entire genome of the virus that the coronavirus carries around and infects your body, infects your cells? I'm just saying.
Right.
And then she also slipped in there that the media is simplifying the science to take away freedom of choice. Well, the job of the media is to report on what the scientists are doing. And so therefore it's the FDA and the CDC. So therefore it's important that there is some simplification so that people can understand, people who have not spent their lives as scientists can understand what's going on. I simplify things so that people can understand. I consider that my job as a physician, to help explain scientific concepts. The media is not leading the discussion. The media is merely passing the information on from the FDA, the CDC, and scientists and doctors in a way that the public can understand. So there's nothing sinister about that. I mean, she goes on to make a lot of different points, that COVID vaccines don't affect transmission of the virus. That's not true. She states that there are a lack of immune cells made in the nose and throat. That is true, but that is not the sole defense that we have against the virus. It's really the ramp up time. What happens when you get vaccinated is the ramp up time to produce immune cells specific to the coronavirus is shortened by a matter of days. So therefore, when you are exposed to the coronavirus, your body mobilizes more quickly, so it diminishes the amount of virus that you end up having and that you can pass along. So therefore it lessens the risk of passing the virus on to other people.
Okay.
I could go on and on and on.
Let's not.
Suffice it to say that she has a little bit of truth wrapped inside a lot of lies.
Okay.
In that video.
So some people may or may not know I'm in the music business. like my real job. My real job is I play a certain instrument. I'm not going to replace my drummer with a bassoonist. I mean, just because you're a musician, all musicians are not equal. Drummers should be drummers. Bassoonists should be bassoonists. And high school band teachers are important in the job of music. Sometimes they can't play professional stage. I'm just saying. You might not see them out there.
Okay. And I just want to say this for everyone who loves to get their information from YouTube and these other sources, just really check how your information, the information you're feeding yourself, aligns with other groups who are oppressing us. So if the information that you're ready and willing to like buy into aligns with white supremacists, if the information you're willing to buy into aligns with people who are oppressing us, that's a notice moment.
Yeah.
Those are the views of this producer and not necessarily those of the doctor.
Bing, bing.
And thank you.
That's it.
So that is our weekly debunk for this week. Thank you. Thank you, Lila and Wayne, for helping me with that.
See ya.
We'll see you.
All right. Well, so this is what we've been waiting for, y'all. I really want to talk about how hospitalizations across the country are off the chain right now. Iowa has been the latest state of many to stop elective procedures. But this was already happening across the South due to the surge from the Delta variant. So what are doctors on the front line seeing? What are patients with COVID experiencing when they go into the hospital? I know of somebody right now who's a patient in a hospital who's there for something totally different, some digestive issues with their pancreas, but they can't get surgery now because elective surgeries are suspended in Southern California. So for those with COVID, are they immediately able to get the care they need? And what about those that survive, those individuals who survive and leave the hospital? Are they coming back later with long COVID symptoms after weeks or months? So with us in our virtual studio, we have an extremely impressive doctor who has been in the thick of the battle, treating heart attacks, strokes, car accidents. She's been through anthrax. She's been through 9/11. She's been through Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Ida. She's an emergency physician with over 20 years of practice, mainly in New Orleans, Louisiana. I want to welcome to our show Dr. Ingrid Labatt. Amazing. Welcome, Dr. Labatt.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for coming. And I should say with full disclosure that I used to teach at Howard University Hospital, and I used to teach residents in emergency medicine. And Dr. Labatt is a proud graduate of Howard University Hospital's emergency medicine program. Yeah, we lived through 9/11 and anthrax together. She reminded me of that before we started the show tonight. So Dr. Labatt, as an emergency physician in Louisiana, tell us, you know, where you practice and what you're seeing, what part of Louisiana you practice in, and what you're seeing in the emergency department right now.
So currently I live in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I practice at a hospital called New Orleans East Hospital. It's actually in the neighborhood that I grew up in, so I see a lot of my neighbors and friends, and so I'm able to get back into my community. I also work at the Veterans Administration here in New Orleans as well, which is the facility that had the very first case of COVID here in New Orleans. So since day one, back in March of 2020, when COVID first hit New Orleans, we have been dealing with COVID patients that have presented to our emergency department. We were a part of the discussion with the flattening of the curve, and we've seen a major shift in how patients have presented and how we've been able to treat them. So it's been a very challenging year as it relates to the delivery of healthcare. We've had to shift, and that's something that we do in emergency medicine every day, all day long, constantly adjusting our ability to deliver care.
Absolutely. How would you say the pandemic now, in terms of who you're taking care of, is different than the pandemic 6 months ago or a year ago?
So when it first hit, it was, we saw a lot of older patients, patients with a lot of what we call comorbid factors that had other medical problems such as high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, COPD, asthma, lung issues, patients on dialysis. Those patients are very, very vulnerable patients. So in addition to healthy individuals as well, because when it first hit, of course, we were not doing the mitigation measures such as masking, social distancing, avoiding large crowds. So once we figured out that that was our best line of defense in the beginning, we all learned the conversation of flattening the curve. We had leadership here in the city and the state that really helped us get that message out. We had to really make some hard decisions here as it relates to New Orleans. We are a very social city. Tourism is our lifeblood. We had to cancel a lot of events. So it was really, really difficult, not just from the delivery of healthcare, but from a social aspect as well. Schools were shut down, activities were stopped. So we all know that we all went through that. So as the initial flattening the curve, keeping people home, we were able to get things under control. But when it first hit, it was a huge ramp up on all levels in terms of being able to deliver care. I'm talking about finding space to put a patient, making sure we had enough ventilators, that conversation went on, getting patients back to be seen by a provider, patients, the long waits in the waiting room. So once we were able to get that under control and we knew that the vaccine was coming.
And just to be clear, New Orleans was one of the places that was first hit along.
Correct.
At the same time that New York was hit. New York got a lot of the publicity. Correct. But New Orleans was severely hit.
2 weeks
because
prior
of Mardi
was Mardi Gras. Yes.
Yeah,
so Mardi Gras. And that starts our festival season. Shortly after that, yeah, we have a big St. Patrick's Day celebration. We have several festivals, Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest. So it's constant crowds. And down here in the South, when we greet one another, we kiss each other hello. So it's a lot of contact that had to be halted. So it was very difficult in getting that such that we could deliver care safely, effectively, and appropriately to patients, because that overwhelming surge, it was all hands on deck.
Right.
And so
what are you seeing differently now from what we saw in the beginning in terms of the types of patients and the individuals coming in for care?
So the vaccine became available, and of course we rolled it. It was rolled out from a national standpoint as to those on the front lines, healthcare providers, people who were on the touching patients, coming in contact with patients. And then we, of course, provided it to the elderly and those with those comorbid factors that I mentioned earlier. So that helped tremendously. Most of those patients you will see are older patients. So they grew up in an era of receiving vaccines as children. Then it came to, we allowed it to be available for everyone, and then getting that message out that this vaccine was safe and effective and will help us get this vaccine under control. So we've run into a lot of vaccine hesitancy amongst our younger population. And so we're seeing a younger patient come through now. Those who didn't see those diseases as children that we were vaccinated against, chickenpox for one. If you ever had chickenpox as a child and you were covered in those pock marks, it was in actually went through the disease. So you understand why it's important to have a vaccine. So getting that message out on many levels that it benefits you personally, it benefits those around you, it benefits your ability to go to work, earn a living, go back to the social events that you're accustomed to, that vaccine is our ticket key answer to getting back to any type of life we were accustomed to prior to March of 20.
So in the emergency department, do you ever admit people who don't have underlying health conditions?
Yes, now? We have. I actually had a young man who was probably 32-ish, I believe, young, hadn't been vaccinated. And while he wasn't, his complaint wasn't shortness of breath. Remember, we associate ventilators and shortness of breath and difficulty breathing to COVID, but COVID has other manifestations when it presents. This young man, yes. So his only thing was, I just feel bad and fever. I did lab work on him and he was in acute renal failure. His kidneys were failing. 36 years old, no other medical problems. And was not vaccinated. The guy next to him that I was taking care of that day was vaccinated. He went home.
Yeah. So again, just to be clear, being vaccinated does not necessarily keep you from getting infected.
Correct.
But it keeps you from getting, overwhelmingly keeps you from getting hospitalized and dying.
Exactly. Significantly decreases your chance at a bad outcome. May it be shortness of breath, being on a ventilator, kidney failure, or even long COVID, which we still don't know much about. And it does exist.
So I'm definitely going to get to that. Let's put a pin in the long COVID because we're going to get back to that. But the people that you're seeing, is there an underlying condition that you've seen that seems to be the most common associated with hospital admission among the unvaccinated?
In particular, I mean, I would just say anecdotally, I get more concerned of my patients who are overweight. They tend to require admission and have more complicated outcomes, particularly if they have other disease processes such as high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, and let's also add nutrition and diet in there. That is effective in terms of keeping us healthy globally, not necessarily warding off COVID per se. A lot of people want to talk about, well, if you eat right and then I never get sick, I'm not going to get COVID. Well, you may still get COVID, but if your body is healthy overall, it may have a better chance of mounting an immune response to fight off the bad effects of COVID.
Right. And you know, I think generally in many communities, including the Black community, overweight is not seen as a disease, but overweight and obesity specifically is a disease.
Absolutely.
It is an underlying condition associated with higher rates of stroke, higher rates of diabetes, higher rates of heart attack, and higher rates of high blood pressure and higher rates of COVID. And so I think people, just last week, we were talking about a New York Times article where a young man was saying his mom had died of COVID. He was 19. She was in her early 40s. And he's like, nothing was wrong with her. But then they showed a picture of her and she was clearly obese. And just the realization, I think, that people don't link that as an underlying condition, but it really is.
Absolutely. It definitely needs to be in the forefront of the conversation. And it is probably leads into a lot of those other diseases as well.
Yeah. So do you ever talk to patients who get admitted as to the ones that are unvaccinated? Do you ever ask them why they don't get vaccinated?
I have.
Why they didn't. What are some of the things that you hear?
I just didn't have time. Mm-hmm. I'm still researching it. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to my doctor about it. And and so when we talk about how it's affecting the hospitals, what it's doing is it's really wearing on the providers, because we know that there's something out there that can prevent death. And the hesitancy of it is very frustrating as a provider when you know that there's something that could have kept this patient from dying. And when they get to me, it's too late. And so you keep seeing it over and over and over again. And it's wearing on not just emergency physicians, but everyone who is in that chain of taking care of that patient, even the, you know, environmental services people, the security guards, the registration clerks, all of us are exposed to patients who have COVID and while we might be vaccinated, we still can carry it. Not as much as the unvaccinated, but the fear that I would bring it home to someone that I care about.
Right, right.
That then, like you said, weighs on you.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like you said, you are in your neighborhood you grew up in. And yes. So you're taking care of your friends and neighbors, and you're seeing your friends and neighbors coming in with COVID, and knowing that it could have been prevented. I mean, I just found out that a dear cousin of mine has COVID, and her whole family has COVID. And, you know, just knowing that she was not or has not been in favor of vaccination is frustrating, because I know that she wouldn't be in the hospital right now, probably, if that were the case. Right. And so I can only imagine that for you, seeing that day in and day out has to be triple.
And it's not just the COVID patients it's affecting. It's affecting my ENT patient who needs transfer to a facility that has ENT if I don't have it. And they don't have a bed to accept her because their ER is full. Ear, nose, and throat. I'm sorry. A specialty. So if my patient needs a specialty that I am not able to provide, and they have to go to a higher level of care, and I need to transfer that patient, that facility that may have the service may not be able to accept my patient because they don't have the capacity to treat because their emergency department is full of patients with COVID or their ICU. So there's certain things that only level one places are able to provide. So these patients need transfer. Or I know of a personal friend of mine who couldn't get his open heart surgery because if he needed an ICU bed, there were no ICU beds available for him once his surgery was done. So, and then the children who are not eligible to be vaccinated are very vulnerable, and we're not doing our due diligence to protect them.
Right. So like you said, it's a ripple effect. And a lot of people might not realize that there are different tiers of hospitals. Like you said, there are some hospitals that have, you know, the highest level of all services being available. Right. And then there are secondary hospitals that have a lot of what you need, but maybe not everything. Right. And then there are clinics. And so if a clinic has a patient that needs to be transferred to a secondary hospital, that secondary hospital doesn't have space. And if the secondary hospital has people, they have to bump up to the highest level, and the highest level doesn't have space. Everybody along that chain is you know, overstretched, under-resourced, because of what's happening. And so one person's individual decision to not get vaccinated can have a ripple effect in the whole system.
Right.
Right.
On many, many levels. Many
So I can't believe it's already time to start to take some of the audience questions. You know, we could go on and on and on, I know, but I need to bring Lila and Wayne back in because I know they probably have some questions waiting in the wings to be answered.
I need to cut on my mic. I'm just getting back from vacation. Dr. Labatt, thank you for your service, just being in the trenches there in that community that's been affected by many natural disasters and now being affected by COVID. So just I'm a layperson, so thank you.
Thank you.
Since you brought that up, while you're looking and looking through the questions, I do want to bring up, you know, we recently had Hurricane Ida in New Orleans. You also worked through Hurricane Katrina. You know, how does that compare to what you're seeing now with COVID? And what is some of the impacts that you saw?
So it was at the same time. So we're full with COVID patients, and now we are getting patients who didn't have access to care, may have run out from everything from I ran out of my prescription. The hurricane came so fast, folks didn't really have a chance to get together for things like that. So it's the importance of having a plan for your health care, be it in a disaster or not a disaster, anticipating you running out of your medications. If you're going out of town and you're on dialysis, where can I get dialyzed? Those kind of things. If the family has to evacuate and Mama can't be in the car, what are we going to do? Who is going, what is her safe place that we can have her during the storm. So it's really imperative that that discussion is ongoing. It changes based on how things change in a family dynamic. So really just anticipating those significant needs and having that discussion amongst, you know, several family members who can advocate and come through when the time comes. So yes, we see, you know, the power went out in New Orleans for about a week. So a lot of heat exhaustion, dehydration, particularly in the elderly, those types of people in close quarters, they're evacuating together. So all of those kind of play into mm-hmm. COVID, you know, and stressing the system, and the system is very stressed right now, but we're going to do it. I mean, it's 20 years I've been in this profession and I still love it.
Yeah.
So we have a question.
And we're blessed to have you in it.
We have a question from Vanessa Parker. What would you say to someone who has many allergies and wants to take the vaccine, but can't take the flu vaccine due to an anaphylactic reaction, and their doctor wants them to wait to take the COVID vaccine?
I would say, the first thing I was going to say was talk to your physician about it, because that's the person you trust the most, and that's the person who should be able to give you the information in a way that you feel comfortable and understand it. But from what I've seen thus far, this vaccine has been given to over 1 billion people on this planet and has been very effective in getting this virus under control with very few significant bad outcomes. Most bad outcomes after the administration of the vaccine come within that first 2 to 4 weeks. And we haven't seen any pattern in a patient that she describes that we should be concerned that it would be detrimental to her. And understand that this vaccine is a different vaccine than the flu vaccine. So I wouldn't extrapolate what happened with the flu vaccine as to what happens with the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, exactly. I would echo that. And I would also specifically say that some flu vaccines are manufactured using eggs. Chicken eggs. Some flu vaccines are not. And so you need to also talk to your doctor about which flu vaccines are not manufactured with chicken eggs, and those are the ones you could take. Furthermore, the Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, none of them are manufactured using eggs. So there would be no risk that you would have an anaphylactic reaction to anything having to do with eggs. The actual ingredients in the vaccine are listed on the FDA's website, and the only allergic reaction you need to be concerned about is if you're allergic to what's specifically in those vaccine formulations, which is public knowledge, again, mm-hmm. listed on the FDA website, and you can talk with your doctor specifically about whether you're allergic to one of those particular components.
Lila.
I saw a question from Sway. Hey, Sway. This will be to both doctors. Are the same patients who are choosing not to be vaccinated also refusing monoclonal antibody treatment when they are in the hospital? Great question.
Great question, Sway. I'm going to turn that over. Dr. LeBach can cover that.
So if I heard you phrase it right, they are not refusing the monoclonal antibody. They will accept that, but have refused the vaccine, which is interesting because I get this thing, this statement, I want to know what's in the vaccine before I take it, but I never get exactly. that statement when I'm given the monoclonal antibody. So,
exactly, which is, I'm sure where Sway was going with that question.
Yes. So it's the same thing with anything else that I give you in the emergency department. I'm going to give you normal saline. I'm going to give you Toradol or Rocephin. And
what's in that saline? I need to know.
Right. So, you know, do your research, ask your questions. It's extremely safe and effective.
But since monoclonal antibodies were brought up, I do want to do a little commercial to just say that if you have been diagnosed with COVID, especially if you're in a high risk group, meaning you have obesity, high blood pressure, lung disease, kidney disease, heart disease, prior stroke, if any of those things are true, HIV, if you have any underlying conditions or you're over age 60, consider getting monoclonal antibodies. Don't wait until you get sick.
We actually have expanded the accessibility, and it is pretty much if you want to get
everybody. Yeah,
it's available. It's available.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now, especially since Dr. Labatt was mentioning that we're seeing younger patients in the emergency departments, people without underlying health conditions, even those people should also be considering getting monoclonal antibodies as soon as you get diagnosed with COVID, because it can avoid a hospitalization altogether.
And avoids possible spread to those around you.
Wow. Yes.
Getting that immune system up and strong.
So the next question we have comes from Kay Williams. Have you seen the medical staff, i.e. doctors and nurses, refusing to get vaccinated?
It's interesting. So yes, I did have some colleagues that I work with. Most of my physician friends were, or colleagues were vaccinated. And I did have some who that I work with that were not. But as we saw this second surge with Delta, they've become vaccinated and getting their families back. So we're happy. And, you know, I always tell my patients they get it when they stop smoking, I give them a little no smoking dance, and they get a thank you for getting your COVID vaccine dance for me, because it's just one less patient that I am worried about. And that helps balance off the other stress a lot. So when I see patients who were hesitant to get that vaccine, It's definitely a boost, definitely big boost.
And I can say I know hundreds of doctors. I only know one who is not vaccinated. And that includes, I know naturopaths, I know integrative medicine physicians, I know, you know, regular, you know, MDs.
Regular MDs who don't like needles.
Right, who don't like needles. I know hundreds of physicians. I have been a physician myself for over 30 years. I know hundreds of them. Only one has decided not to get vaccinated.
So we have our next question. Actually, I'm going to group them. We're in the speed round now. So we have a couple questions. One, thank you, Dr. Labatt. What are monoclonal antibodies? And somebody else wanted to know, is there any group that you would recommend not get vaccinated right now? Is there any group you've seen not? Here it comes from Valerie Spaulding. Just curious, are there any groups that you recommend not to take the COVID vaccine right now?
Speed I would round. Say
no.
No, definitely not.
There is only one group, and those are people who have an allergy to the contents of the vaccine, specifically the contents that are listed on the FDA website. That's the only group. And if you have any doubts, talk with your doctor.
Monoclonal antibody is something like a synthetic antibody that kind of mimics what your body would normally produce, but doesn't have enough time to produce once exposed to COVID. So it's kind of like giving you a little bit of extra kick in the pants to help fight it. But your immune system, I mean, it's amazing what the human body is capable of doing in terms of coming up with a way to fight antigens. And we're learning these terms. Antigen is a foreign substance that your body recognizes, and the immune system goes in and attacks. And so the antibodies are those attackers. And so that monoclonal antibody is just made in a lab and given to you. So yes, made in a lab and infused.
Lie.
I wanted to go back to, now it just escaped me. Let me see if I can find it. Hold, please. Hold on.
Hold, please.
While we're holding, I love the hat too.
Thank you. Oh, this is this was a comment. This is actually text to me. This is to piggyback on Swayze's question about folks coming in and not asking what's in the monoclonal antibodies versus asking what's in the vaccine. Some people don't even know what's in Tylenol. They don't know that it's acetaminophen. They just call it Tylenol. Think correct. About the things that you put in your body on a regular basis. So not a question, but a statement.
Right. Mm-hmm. What's in Mambo sauce for those people from DC?
I mean, right.
You're going to stop talking about Mambo sauce. Right.
What's in your refrigerator?
You're going to stop talking about Mambo sauce. Mambo sauce is a necessity if you eat wings in DC from an Asian carryout.
I do have another question from Diane. Tyrance Neal, back to the third dose. Will seniors around 30 and over be getting the third dose, and when?
Kind of
touched on the booster.
Right. And let me say this. She said around 80 and over.
Oh, right. Seniors around 80 and over. And, yeah, that makes sense.
And there's a reason she said that. And I'm going to go in because that's my cousin too. And it happens that her mother is 101 years old. So I want to shout out my cousin Marion Tyrants, and who's 101, and hopefully she's watching.
Yeah, and she's actually your soror, Dr. Labatt.
All right.
So with the boosters, they are available for people who have waning immunity or immune compromise. So Diane, I would talk to your doctor or to cousin Marion's doctor about giving her the booster, because given her age, it would be expected that her immune system probably isn't robust as somebody much younger. And so she is more than likely eligible to get a booster at this point.
Okay. All right. Okay. You heard that. Take care of my cousin.
All right. Do we have any time for one more question?
We are at the finish line, Dr. Clark.
All right. Well, wow, that went super quick.
Yes.
And I just want to thank Dr. Labatt for joining us tonight. And you know, we have definitely learned so much from you. I think about what's happening in hospitals right now. And so I'll just have some final thoughts just to summarize. And, you know, what I think I've taken away tonight from Dr. Labatt and all the wonderful questions that the audience had to ask is just, you know, the decision of one person or a group of people to not get vaccinated has so many more repercussions down the line than just your individual body and your autonomy over your body. It has effects on those you love. It has effects on the hospital system. The whole reason that we were talking about flattening the curve was so that at the beginning of the pandemic, our hospitals did not get overwhelmed. And it's not just a matter of them getting overwhelmed with COVID patients. It's the fact that when they get overwhelmed, they can't take care of the person that ran out of their medications and is now in heart failure, or the person who requires open heart surgery, or the person who had a car accident, or the child with a severe sore throat. Those people have to wait, and the waits in the emergency departments are getting longer. The waits for beds in the ICU or to even have a regular bed in the hospital are going up, and surgeries are getting canceled for those that need them. And so it's imperative now that everybody take responsibility for what is happening to us as a community, as a country. Take responsibility for those people around you, what I call your tribe or your village, and make the decisions to distance and take that seriously, to mask and take that seriously, and to get vaccinated and take that seriously if you haven't yet done so. Thank you for joining us tonight. It's great to be back with you. I'll be on the Russ Parr Morning Show again tomorrow at 7:45 a.m. Eastern Time. He has a lot of questions for me, so I hope you guys can listen in. And if I don't see you within the next week, remember to be wise, to be well, and to be health empowered. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks to my wonderful producers, Lila Mays and Wayne Bruce, and to my excellent guest tonight, Dr. Ingrid Labatt. Thanks so much for being here.